Welcome to Global Focus. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. On today's program, we're taking a look at farming and water scarcity throughout the continent of Africa. First, here's a story about a proposal launched by Akinwumi Adesina, the African Development Bank president. He wants to tackle food security by cultivating savanna grasslands on the African continent, an idea that doesn't sit well with a number of scientists. Sam Dindi is an environmentalist in Nairobi, Kenya, where he works for the Kenyan Park Services. We asked him what he thought of Adesina's proposal.
I'm not very comfortable with this idea of converting the savannas into agricultural lands because the current agricultural lands have not been well utilized. They are there, but they are underutilized. The way our farmers do their farming is not that good, so there's a lot of wastage. So just rushing to the savanna grasslands, wherever it is, to convert into agricultural land, it's a wrong move. Africa will change. It will no longer be Africa. It will be something else. It will be like Mars. It will be a barren land like the Sahara.
There is a major issue with trying to feed people, even just on the continent. We're not even going to the global thing, but throughout the continent of Africa, food is a major issue. Why wouldn't this be a good idea?
No, there's more to life than eating because they are attracted to these savanna grasses because the soil is fertile and everything, but it is fertile because it has been left virgin for thousands of years. So the moment they are transformed into something else, into agricultural lands, then it no longer be as fertile as they see it right now. So to me, before they go to these savanna grasslands, what about the available arable land? What have they done to it? Have they embraced sustainable farming, conservation farming to these farms? Are they educating farmers on how they can utilize the little that they have before they rush in to convert this other land? What if we convert these savanna grasslands and it's still not yet enough? Shall we go and start converting the oceans?
The African Development Bank has pointed out 8 African countries that this sustainable farming could be done, or the savanna could be converted into farmland. It's 2 million hectares. That includes Ghana, yeah. Guinea, the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, Uganda, Kenya, Zambia, and Mozambique. What do you say to this?
It's a rash decision. For example, like Uganda, a large chunk of Uganda is very fertile. It receives rainfall like throughout the year, but very little of the land is utilized for agriculture. So a second country like Central African Republic, they're in a war. So the best thing to do is let us create peace. After creating peace, then farming can take place. Same with DRC. And besides agriculture, there are so many ways that we can use to generate income. Let's look in terms of tourism. Mm-hmm. All these countries have good potential of tourism. So tourism can supplement people's income, and there's more to life than converting all these virgin lands to agriculture. Because if you embrace tourism, tourism has a multiplier effect. All people will be happy.
You're a conservationist. In terms of climate change, is this really a viable solution?
According to reports, it's believed Africa will be hardest hit by climate change. And these savanna grasslands, they do hold, there are carbon store just as much as the forests. So if all these savanna grasslands, which is nearly like 400 million hectares in Africa, are converted into farmlands, then all the greenhouse gases will be released back on Earth. So what will happen? There will be global warming, and we'll be the very ones again starting to complain. Yeah. So there's a reason as to why the savanna grasslands were there. I believe they should go slow on this matter.
Do the savanna grasslands, we're talking about 8 countries, so that's quite a large swath of the continent, but do they generate income? You're saying that they should be left alone and tourism be developed, but is the money that they would make from tourism enough?
Yeah, it would be more than enough, because for example, in 2016, a country like Kenya generated nearly $2.5 billion from tourism. A country like Uganda, 9.9% of its GDP was from tourism, and it was from wildlife-based tourism. Places like Tsavo East in Kenya, Tsavo West in Kenya, still, if you go to Kidepo in northern Uganda, Queen Elizabeth National Park in western Uganda, all these parks and many other parks in Tanzania, in all these countries, the revenue they generate is able to create jobs, it's able to create hospitals, build roads. It's more than enough. We are sitting on a great potential.
Okay. So you're saying that it should be channeled in another way and not looked at as like a possibility for farming then?
Yeah. First of all, before converting this virgin savanna grasslands, what are we doing with the available arable land? Has it been 100% utilized, or why is it not producing enough? There's very many factors. See, there's poor farming practices. They're not using gabions. They're not using cover crops. People are not, they have left the traditional crops like sorghum. Sorghum, which is a grass, it has been found as it originated from Eastern Africa, from these savannas. It has been left, people are going for corn. Corn needs, it's very vulnerable to the climate. But these traditional African crops, they are very tolerant. So if you embrace such kind of crops, embrace correct farming practices, embrace conservation agriculture, and then I believe this food crisis will be solved. The savanna grasslands will be there to support tourism and combat climate change through climate resilience methods, through, let's say, for example, the mitigation and adaptation. So I believe they should be left intact.
Up next, how can we deal with Africa's water scarcity issue? The differences in water disparity really differ from one of the 54 countries to another. Hatem Jamali, an economics professor at the University of Manuba in Manuba, Tunisia, has created a water poverty map. He uses data to help development officials throughout the continent understand that water issues are not only a problem with sourcing, but a socioeconomic issue.
I found that there is very clear disparity between countries, not only in the water availability, but also in all issues linked to water scarcity in Africa. We found that there is a disparity in water poverty in one map, and we found also there is a clear disparity in the manner of using the water available in each country.
Can you give us an example of somewhere where there is water poverty and somewhere where there's not?
The most clear disparity that I have found in these maps is the disparity between the north and the sub-Saharan Africa. We found that there is a disparity in each component of the index. We found that there is a disparity in water availability. North Africa is known as the most water scarcest in the continent. But if we look at the use and access, mainly at the access to water, we found that the rate of access to waters, to regular waters and sanitation, is very high compared to sub-Saharan countries. In contrast, we found that there is some contradiction in sub-Saharan Africa. We found that there is a lot of waters. Countries have high water availability per habitant. But if we look at the access to water, we found that there is very low rate of access to water, to regular water, to drinkable waters, compared to North Africa. So I think that there is a problem of management, a problem of allocation of the water resources in sub-Saharan Africa.
Also, you were mentioning a difference between the economically developed countries, who are the most water scarce, and the lower income countries. So this is also has a socioeconomic aspect too.
Exactly. One of the main advantages of the strengths of the index I have used is to include many components. So we found that there is a component linked to water availability, the physical water availability called resources component. We found also an economic indicator called capacity. And the capacity gives an idea about the economic power and the economic dimension and socioeconomic dimension of the problem of water. So if we look at the north, for example, of the North African country, we found that countries have an increasing economic growth and are developed compared to sub-Saharan Africa. So we could understand that this economic dimension could explain why access to water is very high in North Africa and very low in sub-Saharan Africa.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening to Global Focus. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto.